This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 7th at 11:08 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Hillary Clinton will announce she is running for president and then say the next day, well, I'm not sure.
She would never waffle, Mike. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at the shrewd Snollygosters who toil in the world of Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Governor DeWine made his case for the gas tax increase this week, and it did not stick with Republican leaders in the House.
We'll get to that in just a minute, but first we have some breaking news, or at least news that was breaking as of Thursday afternoon. Sherrod Brown is not running for president.
Speaking to reporters Thursday, Brown said he can be more effective by staying in the Senate.
It's not fear of any specific opponent. It's not. It wasn't process. It wasn't money.
Brown says his goal was never really to be president, but to drive the national conversation to focus on issues involving working Ohioans. And he says his Dignity of Work tour has accomplished that because many of the candidates in the race are now talking more about those issues.
Brown says he's not endorsing any other Democratic candidate at this point. He says he will help any of them as they talk about issues involving workers. He says he is not thinking about being a vice presidential candidate at this point, which has also been a source of speculation, but it's official. Sherrod Brown is out of the Democratic race for president in 2020.
I don't think that rules him out as a vice presidential candidate, just not thinking about it at this time. He was vetted in 2012 as a possible running mate for Hillary Clinton, or in 2016 as a possible running mate for Hillary Clinton. She went with Tim Kaine instead. I still think it's possible. I think it would help the whichever Democratic nominee it would be whether it's Joe Biden, whether it's Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, whoever, I think he would go a long way toward helping them win Ohio to help. And specifically with his Dignity of Work, rust belt, rustic voice, disheveled look, he goes a long way toward winning back those disillusioned Trump voters.
Yes, I think he that's the message he wanted to send in this Dignity of Work tour. And he said today to reporters that he accomplished that. Whether he can do that in 6 weeks, I don't know. But he says he's raised the consciousness about the plight of the American worker for other Democratic candidates. I tend to think the reason why he is not running is because he's gotten word that Joe Biden is running. I think Joe
Biden. They're the same candidate, basically.
Yeah, I think that Joe Biden has dropped hints. His organization has dropped hints through their actions over the past couple of weeks that he is preparing to enter the race. Joe Biden has reportedly been talking to Ohio Democrats. I think that Joe Biden is the candidate who can appeal to those working class voters in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And he has a huge advantage on name ID and money raising ability. And Sherrod Brown just. Politicians do not run for office for one big reason, for the most part. They know they can't win.
Sherrod Brown, if he could win the White House, I highly suspect he would run for the White House. He would not say, I'm going to stay in the Senate and be more effective here if he thought he could be president, because he would be more effective as president than he would be as a senator from Ohio. No offense to his job in the Senate. It's a very important, dignified position. But if he could be president—
It's simple math.
Right.
There are 100 senators.
There are, and there's such a bottleneck of Democratic candidates. Bernie Sanders officially in, Kamala Harris officially in, Cory Booker officially in. There could be many more candidates who come in. And I don't think Brown had the name ID. Even though he was in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada, South Carolina, I don't think it went nearly far enough to top the likes of Bernie Sanders and especially Joe Biden if he does enter the race.
He never caught fire. I think he was well received in those states. He drew pretty good crowds, but you look at the polls after he was in New Hampshire, he didn't move. He was about 1%, maybe 2%.
Those are politicos at those crowds, too. Those are not average factory workers.
Yeah, so he didn't jump up to above, say, Amy Klobuchar or into that sort of second tier of Democratic candidates in Iowa or New Hampshire. And even in the national polls, he was still bumping around 1.5% to 2% if you look at the real clear politics average. So he just never caught fire. He gave it a shot, and now, you know, I think he will be – he'll be looked at as – if he didn't even – he'll be looked at as a person who the Democratic nominee for president wants to have on the campaign trail with him in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan and Wisconsin. He will be a big player in the presidential campaign. Whether or not he is a vice presidential candidate remains to be seen. Republican Ohio Governor Mike DeWine delivered his State of the State address this week. He spoke for 45 minutes, stayed on script. He talked about infant mortality, the opioid epidemic, the economy, education, natural resources, and his proposed gasoline tax.
Yes, the gas tax increase played a big part in the speech. It took up about a third of his time at the podium, actually. But he never actually used the word tax when talking about his plan to increase the gas tax by 18 cents a gallon. To avoid that dreaded three-letter word tax, he had to get a little creative.
Additional revenue, requesting $1.2 billion, our proposal, but we can only do it with what I have sent you. This is a minimalist approach, the money that we're asking for. This is a conservative approach. The $1.2 billion.
No matter what DeWine called it, he was clear the state needs the tax increase to fix and maintain roads. He says his 18 cent a gallon request was the bare minimum that the state needed.
Look, I get it. I know there certainly would be a temptation to reduce the money that we're asking for.
Ah, temptation. He was right. That's exactly what the House Finance Committee did. Only a few hours after the governor said that raising the tax any less than 18 cents a gallon will be irresponsible and cost people's lives, the committee introduced a substitute bill that nearly cut it in half. Here's House Finance Committee Chair Scott Oeschlager.
Beginning October 1st, 2019, Ohio's motor vehicle fuel tax will be increased by 10.7 cents on gasoline and 20 cents on diesel.
Joining us now to talk about the politics of the gas tax hike and the rest of Governor DeWine's State of the State address is longtime political observer Mary Ann Sharkey. Mary Ann, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you. Mary Ann, pleased to be with you.
Good to have you. You're now a public affairs consultant working out of Cleveland. Before that, you worked with Governor Taft. Before that, you worked at the State House as a reporter for both the Plain Dealer and the Dayton Daily News. DeWine made no surprises by lobbying for the gas tax increase that he had talked about in the week before, actually, plans about it were released. Do you think he made a compelling case?
Yeah, I do think he made a compelling case. Certainly someone who lives up in Northeast Ohio with the weather that we have knows a lot about the potholes and the mm-hmm. road conditions. And I am in complete agreement with him that it absolutely needs to be done by the car repair shops end up being the real true beneficiaries of these roads.
Mary, let's talk about the roads for a minute. You bring up an interesting point because you travel between Cleveland and Columbus and Dayton quite a bit because of family and work obligations. You know, around here, our highways, how would you compare the highways in Central Ohio to the highways in the Cleveland area?
Well, Central Ohio's roads actually seem to me a little bit better. They seem to be in better shape. I know the 71 and 70 split and all that. It's a nightmare. And some of the things, and there's a lot of accidents. But a lot of the times I blame it on the drivers themselves, Mike, than I do the actual road conditions, because I do think Cleveland drivers know something about driving in bad weather.
Ooh, little shade little Columbus drivers.
Little
there.
Dig
Throw
at us down,
there.
Down
yes.
here in tropical Columbus.
Right.
You're a political consultant. You covered the State House for a long time. As of this recording, state lawmakers, the full House is expected to meet around 1 o'clock on Thursday afternoon to talk about this gas tax hike. What at this point do you think lawmakers do? What direction do you think they go?
I don't think they go 18 cents. I think that's just way too much for them to handle. I think they're going to have to take some steps, you know, maybe 12, 13, maybe they can get to 14. But I doubt if they'll get to 18. And I think Mike DeWine probably knew that when he threw out 18 cents, although he never mentioned it in his State of the State speech, as you well point out there. But I think he threw out 18 knowing that they would bring it down.
So even though he says this was the bare minimum, you know, it's almost like a car salesman, you know.
A politician wasn't totally honest.
You know, you highball, low ball, and you meet in the middle.
I think Mike DeWine is someone who's watched his whole career. This may be the first time he's ever suggested such a huge tax. So that's probably why he couldn't get his mouth to be able to say tax.
Well, you were working for Governor Taft the last time this gas tax was increased by a whopping 2 cents a gallon.
Right.
What are your memories of that?
I have no memories of it, to be honest with you. I only know it because, you know, people looked it up. I don't think there was any real opposition. It was such a, you know, minimal amount of 2 cents. And at that time, you know, the gas prices were always fluctuating wildly. So I don't recall any, you know, big public outcry or even a huge issue about it.
When you talk to people on the right about this issue, they don't want any taxes at all. When you talk to people on the left, they argue that the gasoline tax is a regressive tax because it takes up a larger percentage of lower income people's incomes. Again, this is a very conservative legislature, but Larry Householder fancies himself as a champion of the common man. Do you think even a 10-cent or not quite 11-cent tax increase makes it harder for these Republicans come primary season in next year? Do you think this puts them in a bad position?
Well, no, not really, because I think that, you know, rural Ohio has the same problems as urban Ohio. This is one issue that is going on all over the state of Ohio, and my guess is that some of the Republican legislators are hearing the same thing from their constituents about the road conditions as the urban legislators are hearing about the road conditions. I know about the issue about regressive taxes, and we hear this every time from the Democrats, but this is a user tax, and the people who will be paying the most will be people who have to fill up their large SUVs or the truckers.
How about public transit? Public transit, the bigger issue, I would say, in Cleveland than it is here in Columbus. I mean, bus system here is pretty well used, but it's really much more used up in Northeast Ohio. There's an increase in funding for public transit in the House plan. Gas tax money cannot directly use. State gas tax money cannot be directly used for public transit. Why
transit money is desperately needed in Northeast Ohio, yeah, in the Cleveland area. A lot of people, more people are dependent on public transit here than I suspect anywhere else in the state. And the truth is, a lot of the jobs now are in the suburban Cleveland. So for the urban, for people who live in the urban area, and they need public transit to get to their jobs now.
Yeah, we're seeing the same thing here in Columbus, Southeast Columbus, with the warehouse jobs there and the data center,
right.
Amazon's building warehouses.
Oh, that's right.
Dayton, I think, is probably seeing the same thing. I'm no doubt Cincinnati.
Dayton is seeing the same thing, right.
Why the visceral opposition to public transit on the part of some Republicans?
I don't really know the answer to that. I really don't. I mean, I think they think it's an urban issue, and so it's not their problem. That's the only thing I can think of, because it. But, you know, their employers will tell them it's an issue. Their employers want people to be able to get to work. So I think it would be a good idea for the employers to get a hold of their friends to the right and tell them they need public transit.
Do they have a point when they see whether it be a bus in Cleveland or in Cincinnati, at some points in the day, perhaps at night, you look in the window and there are no passengers in there, but the bus is still going about its route. Do they have a point saying, you know, we have to do something differently than spend money on that?
Yeah, I mean, public transit is probably not as used as it should be, but I think we have more in Northeast Ohio and the Cleveland area. We have more people taking buses in the evenings and all the time than you have in Central Ohio. I don't see Columbus as bus dependent as Cleveland is.
Yeah. I mean, there are subways in New York and Chicago and in Boston that are empty many parts of the day.
Right, right.
Marianne, Governor DeWine spent about a third of this address on the gas tax. He obviously talked about other things, including creating a new public health fund, expanding the state's drug treatment capacity, expanding wraparound service models, dramatically increasing the number of specialty docket courts around Ohio, also additional education resources for mentoring, after-school programs, health care, mental health care. Is this a Republican governor? This is a lot of social welfare programs.
I would totally agree. As I said to somebody, if you had walked in or started to listen to his speech and you didn't know who was delivering it, you would have sworn up and down it was being given by a Democrat. I mean, lead paint, infant mortality, foster care, social services, all those issues he highlighted. And not normally do you hear Republicans highlight those issues. And I, you know, as an aside, I say good for him. I'm glad he did it. He's correct. The opioid crisis is out of control. We do have a lead paint issue. We do have infant mortality issues. We do have foster care issues. So I'm glad that he made that a point. I also loved the moment, of course, being a woman, I loved the moment when he introduced his team of seven women directors who were handling the opioid crisis. It was really nice. It was nice to see such diversity.
Yeah, he's got perhaps the most diverse cabinet in the history of Ohio. I think most
I believe he does.
Observers
I've been covering, state government for many, many years or been involved with state government, and this has to be the most diverse cabinet ever.
I don't want to get bogged down in details, but how's he going to pay for all that stuff, Marianne?
I don't know. We're going to have to see when he unveils his budget. I don't know if he's looking at, a growth in his budget. I don't know if he's looking at one-time funds, to help with some of these things. I don't know if he's going to dip into the rainy day fund. I don't know if he's going to try to get some more savings out of Medicaid. We will not know until we see that budget, but I can't imagine that he threw all that out there without having some idea how he's going to fund it.
And this comes as Larry Obhoff has said, if we're going to increase the gas tax, we need to cut the income tax.
Well, I happen to be a beneficiary of the cuts in the income tax because I have a small business, so I greatly appreciate what happened. But I would also say, Warren Buffett style, not that I have Warren Buffett money, but I should be paying my fair share.
Well, Marianne Sharkey, longtime political consultant, longtime State House reporter, whatever happens, we'll be covering it here. And thanks again for joining Snollygoster.
We're very surprised, Marianne, you don't have Warren Buffett's.
If you do, that's okay.
Income.
You could pledge your support to WOSU right now.
Yeah, we have a drive coming up. So
yes, right.
Thanks, Marianne.
Call it in my pledge. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, time now moving to our weekly segment, the Snollygoster of the Week, the politician who covered himself or herself in slippery shrewdness.
This week, our winner, Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton. Remember her? She made it official this week. She will not seek the White House in 2020.
I'm not running, but I'm going to keep working and speaking and standing up for what I believe.
When she gave that interview to suburban New York TV station New York 12, it seemed pretty clear until the next day when the New York Times' Maggie Haberman tweeted that she heard from someone close to Clinton. And Maggie writes, quote, "They say she wasn't trying to be emphatic and close the door on running when she spoke to that local reporter. And she was surprised by how definitively it played." This person said that Hillary Clinton is extremely unlikely to run, but that she remains bothered that she's expected to close the door on it when John Kerry is not. She has told her team she is waiting at least to see Bob Mueller's report. She was surprised how definitively it plays. Let's hear that again.
I'm not running, but I'm going to keep working and speaking and standing up for what I believe.
Here's the problem, Mike. We fell for it again. I'm not running.
She's not running right now. No.
Elizabeth Warren did the same thing with Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition. They had a spat about a year ago. She said, "I'm not running for president." And
she says, "I'm not running, but I want to have a voice."
Again, nothing here is literally incorrect.
I know.
Obviously, she meant it to sound like she's not running in 2020. That's obviously what she meant. But she did technically give herself an out by saying, "I'm not running."
Present tense.
Right. It's absurd. And it's why she is our Snollygoster of the Week. But she's not running. Come on. She can't run.
No.
That would be a disaster.
I would say it's highly unlikely.
Yeah. Like Nina Turner said on last week's episode, this is America. Anyone who wants to run can run, but I can't imagine a scenario where she does. Either way, if she does, we will certainly talk about it because it would be good podcast material. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week or any segment at all, shoot us an email. You can do that at snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes. Also, tell your friends to subscribe to us. Go down to the State House, knock on all those lawmakers' doors, tell them they should listen to Snollygoster. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster on WOSU Public Media.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.